KW1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. The Los Angeles Unified School Districts reached an agreement with union workers, increasing salaries for about 30,000 employees. The union members staged a three-day strike, which teachers supported, and closed schools. President Biden authorizes the U.S. to retaliate for a deadly drone attack on a base in eastern Syria.
A U.S. official confirmed to us that one of the air defenses was down at the time of the deadly attack, something they will be looking into. But do not expect the U.S. to back off. President Biden said, "We are not going to stop," implying there could be further retaliations.
ABC's Martha Raddatz. President Biden defending his administration's work to shore up the U.S. banking system.
I think it's going to take a little while for things to just calm down, but I don't see anything that's on the horizon that's about to explode.
Two large U.S. banks collapsed this month. Firefighters in the scene of a fire at a chocolate factory in West Reading, Pennsylvania. This is ABC News. Uncle Sam wants you to cut your salt intake and is proposing rules that will help food companies do that for you. ABC's Andy Field in Washington.
Bite into almost anything and it's likely loaded with salt. Great for the taste buds, not so much for your heart. Which is why the FDA is proposing new rules to let food makers use healthier salt substitutes in items that include cheese, canned vegetables, and dressings. Health experts say that would help lower the rates of high blood pressure and stroke, as many Americans consume 1.5 times the recommended amount of salt each day.
Movie star and entrepreneur Gwyneth Paltrow took the stand today in a Utah courtroom, Paltrow being sued by a man who says he suffered significant injuries after Paltrow crashed into him while skiing in February 2016 at Utah's Deer Valley Resort. Terry Sanderson claims Paltrow's recklessness caused lasting physical injuries. Paltrow claims Sanderson actually crashed into her. Sanderson seeking more than $300,000 in damages. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Southeast Wisconsin could be in for a lot of wet and heavy snow tomorrow. Forecasters predict 5 to 8 inches of snow from Janesville, east to Kenosha, and north to Manitowoc. Madison and the Fox Valley should get 1 to 5 inches. It's supposed to come down fast enough to make roads slippery for a time, but it's warm enough that the snow won't stay on the ground for long. Majority Republicans on the Wisconsin State Building Commission are rejecting every recommendation in Governor Evers' capital budget request. Evers' capital budget request is the largest in at least a decade, coming in at almost $4 billion. Republicans are expected to approve a shorter list of building requests later this year. That's what they've been doing in the recent past. In sports, the Bucks are at Utah tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Kids, they're just different than us. They have no inhibitions, consider silverware optional, and can find fun anywhere. And when kids get really sick, they're different than us too. Until now, children diagnosed with blood cancer have been treated like many adults. Not anymore. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society proudly introduces the Dare to Dream Project, transforming treatment and care through advocacy, education, and the largest global clinical trial for kids with blood cancer. For the first time, a specific treatment can be matched to a specific type of cancer in a specific child. It'll be the biggest medical advancement for little patients in history. Dare to dream with us. Support the Dare to Dream Project and all the work that the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does at lls.org.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
Hey, son, how are you feeling? I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram. Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
And I work for you. Join us daily at therickssmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, got an interesting press release from the folks at the Department of Labor. They're saying that the U.S. Department of Labor and Health and Human Services are going to be working together. They've issued this memorandum of agreement, this MOU, that I got to tell you, it's about damn time. They are going to be monitoring child labor violations across the country. You would think we'd already be doing this. You'd think the states would be doing that. But sadly, what we're seeing is a lot of states are loosening their child labor requirements. Now the Fed is saying, look, through the Wage and Hour Division and Health and Human Services Departments for children and families, they've signed this agreement to formalize a partnership between the agencies and outline procedures that the agencies are going to follow so that they can get out there and share information, deepen their information sharing, coordination, training, and education. This is at least a step in the right direction, because this is the feds admitting states are doing a horrible job of this. This is a problem. And here to share some thoughts on maybe just how big of a problem this is, I've asked Jess Piper to come talk with us. Jess is the executive director for Blue Missouri. She's also a former state house candidate in Missouri. A rural mom, also fighting for public schools, podcaster. You can check out her podcast, Dirt Road Democrat, hosted by the Heartland Pod. Jess, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So what do you make of this? I mean, I think this is finally a good step. You've got the feds going, look, well, maybe we can't trust the states. Maybe the states are going crazy. We've got to start maybe stepping up our game. I think this is a pretty good, at least a good step.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice. We're going to need somebody to step in. You've got states like Arkansas and Iowa, you know, rolling back child labor laws and letting kids go into, you know, really dangerous situations and different places and work. But you know what? If you look back a couple of years, Donald Trump put Betsy DeVos in charge of the Department of Education, obviously, to dismantle it. But they tried to roll the Department of Labor and the Department of Education into the same department. I don't know if people kind of forgot that part, but this has been a thing for a while.
No, it's about training, like George Carlin used to say, training obedient workers. People are just smart enough to push the buttons and shuffle the papers, but not smart enough to realize how badly they're getting screwed over. And this is one of those things. Now, I'm surprised, and I want to get your thoughts on this. I'm surprised at how many people aren't as freaked out by these child labor changes as I am. I guess it's I've spent too much time reading labor history and knowing where we've come from. Are you freaked out by the direction that we're going?
Yeah, they're doing it while they're simultaneously defunding schools. They're in places like where I am. I live in a town of 480 people. They'll defund our schools until there's no school left. Betsy DeVos, again, she said it with her own mouth. She said that they envisioned rural schools closing, that there would be no brick and mortar schools for kids like mine, that they could listen to ebooks, work in a field, and hopefully try to find an apprenticeship at, a John Deere dealership. This is purposeful. Iowa says and that kids can go to work as early as 14 in the meatpacking industry, logging industry, and construction industry, 14 years old. I mean, it's bad.
And the worst part that I read about this, and I don't know if you saw this as well, but as long as there's an apprenticeship between an employer and a school, the employer has a liability shield. They're not responsible if the kid gets hurt. To me, that's enormous.
Yeah, there's no liability if they're hurt or killed on the job. Yeah, what they're doing is, right in front of our eyes. I know you said you had talked to somebody about it earlier, but we don't have to have tinfoil hats to see what's going on. If you defund education and you roll back child labor laws, it's right in front of you.
But the message that I keep getting from people is, that's not going to be your kids, and it's not going to be my kids. I'm fortunate enough to have resources that I don't have to send my kids out into the workforce to be able to keep a roof over our head or food on the table. We know who this is aimed at, I think.
It was aimed at kids like me. I got a job. Well, I started working when I was 12 babysitting. I got my first real job at 16 at Piggly Wiggly. And it wasn't to pay for a new car. It was to help my mom buy groceries. And what happened is that I was smart enough, obviously to go to college, but I was paying for it for myself and I couldn't pay for the first semester. So I ended up, I had already been working for 2 years. Why not just keep, working as a cashier? And I think it creates that, the George Carlin, the worker beast, because you're just used to working and why not just keep going?
Yeah, but I'm like I said, my first job was at 8 years old. I delivered the newspaper. 9 years old, I had two paper routes, a morning and an evening. We all had those kind of jobs. But they weren't in factories. They weren't on the kill floor. We weren't putting kids back into logging and construction. I think having a job is a good thing for kids to learn a little bit of responsibility, but I don't want that to be the sole focus of their childhood. And I fear we're heading back in this direction. And that's what really concerns me.
The Washington Post did a story a couple of weeks ago and they were very blunt about it. They said in this market, when people are unwilling to pay a living wage or to raise wages or to give people benefits, the next best, place to find your workers is children.
Yep.
It's what's happening.
No, we need cheap labor and they're cutting off immigration. So it's got to be the kids.
Yep.
It's all happening right in front of us. And you as a former teacher, you've watched what's happened to public education. Especially in rural communities, as you said, the destruction there is to get everyone into cyber charters. And in my state of Pennsylvania, cyber charters are horrible. I mean, just abysmal failures. And yet there's still money going into them, tons of money. Because you know what? We can make them better eventually.
Well, the thing with education, and I'm really going to speak about Missouri here for a second, but it applies to almost every single red state because our legislators don't write their own bills. They get them from ALEC, just like Iowa and Texas and Florida. They're all the same. That's why everybody sees the same exact freaking thing happening is because they're not writing their own bills. But we're 49th in educational funding, 50th in teacher pay. A starting teacher in Missouri can make like 27 grand is what they can start at. They keep saying they're going to raise it. It's all smoke and mirrors, but it's purposeful. And everyone needs to understand that the Missouri GOP has been in charge for 20 years. They're the ones who defunded school. They're the ones to make sure that teachers were leaving because they want to privatize the schools, because they want to point to, terrible test scores and say, see, look, these schools suck and your kids shouldn't be in there. And here's a voucher. Well, I tell you, Rick, and anybody in rural America, you can give us 20 vouchers. It doesn't mean anything. There is absolutely nowhere to send my kid. The nearest public school is 20 miles after the one. The nearest private school is an hour away. We can't use vouchers. Vouchers in Missouri, two-thirds of people who received vouchers because we passed a voucher scheme, two-thirds of those people already had their kids in private schools. So it's just poor and lower-class people, earners, that are sending our money to higher and richer, wealthier communities.
No, I mean, but that's, again, I keep coming back to our political system isn't broken. It's operating exactly the way the wealthy want it to operate. It's Washington's operating exactly they want it, the way it operates. You know, your state house in Missouri, same thing. In Harrisburg, same thing. Operating exactly the way it's intended, more for the very well-to-do. And while the rest of us, you know, we get to fight over crumbs. But education, and this is one of these things where, you know, we should be fighting this fight on, you know, right, left, center. It shouldn't matter. If you take education away from children, especially working class kids, there's nowhere for them to go but down. And I'm struck by how easy it has been to divide parents on nonsense issues and get them to almost voluntarily destroy their own schools because someone else might be doing something. It's insane to me at how easy it has been. Do you see it the same way?
Yeah, they've already taught folks how to ask for less for their children. They have taught them they only need to learn to read, to write, and to do math, which is a third grade education, right? They have told them that indoctrination is happening, that they're reading pornographic, you know, books, that teachers are, you know, pushing their agenda onto children, which we know happens every decade. Every single decade, this culture war, and I hesitate to call it that because it is harmful to people. It's not just a culture war. It harms real people. But this comes up over and over again, going back from the 50s with Milton Friedman, the 70s with the Moral Majority, and the 80s with Reagan. And, you know, it just never stops. And they have already trained people to ask for less. And now people are doing it. They're showing up at Board of Education meetings and losing their ever-loving minds over something that's not even there. CRT is not a thing. It's not taught, you know, K-12. What does woke mean? I don't even know what that means. And DEI, you're worried that we might recruit Black teachers? Like, the whole thing is nonsense, but it gets folks riled up.
A perfect example and just how far things have gotten out of control. I was reading a story out of Florida. Yes, Florida. And my favorite line of this story, because evidently parents were upset about Michelangelo's sculpture, David. I'm sure you've seen this story.
Yes.
Because, you know, they saw the naked David, which we've all seen, and all of us kind of chuckled and moved along. My favorite line from the entire story was, and maybe you'll catch it too, Tallahassee Classical, it's the name of the charter school, a Hillsdale curriculum school is required to teach Renaissance art in sixth grade. Did you catch the part that I find comical in there?
Renaissance art?
No, Hillsdale
College. Hillsdale
College. Hillsdale College's curriculum. They are a right-wing school that teaches how to do right-wing radio and all kinds of right-wing extreme curriculum, takes no federal money because they don't want to have to do anything that we the people want. They are privately funded so they can be as crazy as they want to be. They are influencing charter schools with their curriculum, and that's not even crazy enough.
Right. No, I know. Everything is just imploding, and it's all because, well, privatization pushes this. But when you come down to it, the reason, and folks ask this all the time, why are they doing this? Why are they going after it? So in Missouri, we give away $1 billion tax cuts, and then we decide we're not going to fund Medicaid. And there are so many issues. Our schools are defunded. Our hospitals are closing. I can go out and pick out a piece of pavement off of my highway and bring it into my house if I wanted to. The point is, the GOP has been in charge for 20 years, and they can't say what they've done. They can't be honest with citizens and say, this is on us. So they have to create this insane war, right? They have to go after teaching David because they have no policies and they have nothing that real people want to vote for.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. You know, the sculpture of David, they say, was done sometime between 1501 and 1504. And here we are, 2023. And now people are upset about it. It's just crazy to me. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jess Piper. She's the executive director for Blue Missouri. She's also a former state rep candidate in the state of Missouri, Rural Mom, fighting for public schools, which I love. Make sure you check out her podcast, Dirt Road Democrat, hosted by the Heartland Pod. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at that. But you know, here's where I want to focus a little bit of time on. Because the reality is they're winning. You said Republicans won't take credit for the things that they've done. You're right. They have created the largest billionaire class in the history of civilization, and they've done that off the backs of workers. They've done that off the backs of students. They've done that off the back of college students who they've saddled with a lifetime of student loan debt, and yet they're not taking credit for it, and I think we should give them credit for it.
I give them credit for it every day. I mean, I am the most hated person, according to the Missouri GOP. Like, they hate my guts. They roast me every day. But I can't be silent. I ran and I lost. I got 1-4 in my my community, which was kind of a gut punch. But then when I think, 1-4, and when I go to Walmart and Hy-Vee and these people voted for someone who talked about, abortion, who talked about the fact that everyone deserves health care, who talked about the fact that, you should get 2 years of free college and daycare for free. So I did talk to a lot of people, and you hear this a lot, Rick. You'll hear people say, oh, those people are just hicks. They vote against their self-interest. But I need your audience to know something. 40% of the seats, House seats last year in Missouri went uncontested. So I'd like to know how these people can freaking vote in their self-interest when there's not a candidate, right? Yeah. They don't have a choice. So until we come together and get our acts together and make sure that people have someone to vote for, nothing changes. We're chasing our tails.
No, and that's a perfect point. And the fact that we've stopped talking to rural communities. We did a multi-state road tour back before the election, and we went from Pennsylvania out to Iowa and through Wisconsin and Michigan and all over, and in specifically going to rural communities and talking to rural voters. And you know what? Miraculously, we found out their interests are the same. They're the same as in urban areas. They want good jobs. They want safe neighborhoods. They want good schools. They want health care. The problem is we've been pitted against each other, the rurals and the urbans, just like any other way they can slice and dice us, male, female, black, white, blue collar, white collar, green collar, ring around the collar. They'll figure out a way to divide us, and we let them all the time. And that's the part that drives me insane.
Yeah. And, you hear people say that Democrats have left rural areas of America. Well, guess who else has? The Republicans. I've never had a Republican knock on my door or call and ask me for their vote. I don't see them anywhere in my town. There's not only Democrats left, everybody left. Everybody said it is what it is. Y'all are on your own, and so until we do better, we can't. And I know most states are like this. Missouri's 1/3 rural. You can't move the state anywhere if you're not taking rural Missouri with you. And you only do that with candidates. You only do that by sending, money to them, making sure that they're funded. Even if it's in a race that's going to take 3 cycles to win, it's still worth it. You said yourself, the Republicans have been playing the long game since the 50s. They got SCOTUS now. They've had a long time to get this together. And Democrats need to stop being desperate and making knee-jerk decisions, right? We need a long game.
I got to tell you, I love you. Democrats out there, I hope you're listening, and I hope you'll check out the podcast, Dirt Road Democrat. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that, hosted by the Heartland Pod. Jess Piper, I appreciate you taking time for us. You got to come back and talk with us again.
Anytime, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Jess is the executive director of Blue Missouri. Make sure you check out the podcast. Good stuff. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So Saturday, big rally down in Waco, Texas, evidently. Number 45, the former president, is having a little shindig down in Waco. And you go, gee, why would you be choosing Waco? Oh, yeah, this is the 30th anniversary of Waco. This is the 30th anniversary of all of the craziness that sprung out of that. And, you know, as I was thinking about the whole David Koresh thing and, you know, the FBI, you know, the ATF and the FBI and all of the right wing insanity that went on, you know, Timothy McVeigh popped into my head because he was in Waco giving his little spiels about government overreach. And then, of course, you know, he did, you know, blow up a little building in Oklahoma City, if you remember the Murrah building. Interestingly enough, they found him, you know, with the Turner Diaries by his side, you know, the Bible of the right-wing racist. My mind went to this place, and I think this is just not me. Basically, all of the mainstream media going, what? What's Trump doing? Running around, you know, calling, you know, the Manhattan District Attorney human scum, you know, saying that there's going to be potential death and destruction. He is outwardly saying, and this is the weird thing, and you know, I said this from the beginning, I said it was masterful how he turned the power dynamic in this indictment situation. I really don't think it's going to be anytime soon before someone indicts, because I think they're all waiting for somebody else to go first, because they don't want the wrath of the MAGA world to come down on them. And they want to do it on their timetable. And what Trump did masterfully, because he had the power to do it, is he set the timetable. Now, he was going, they're going to indict me on Tuesday. And they weren't ready to indict him on Tuesday. You know, there was a leak. And I'm going, who was the leak, Donald? Was it John Barron? Did John Barron whisper in your ear? For those who don't know, John Barron is Trump's alter ego. Trump used to call people as John Barron and say, John Barron, here, you know, Donald Trump would like to speak to you. Please hold. And he would be his own secretary under the name of John Barron. So I'm assuming John Barron whispered in his ear and said, you know, they're coming for you. And this gave him the ability to say, no, I'm going to set the term. And look, I give him credit. Guy's not dumb. He's got everybody on their heels at this moment. And he knows that his base, some of them are, some of them are off the beaten path. Got me thinking, you know, by doing this stuff, you know, what are you setting up? I mean, today you had a white powder sent to this Alvin Bragg's office. That was I forget what the message was. You're going to die or we're going to kill you or something like that. Alvin, I'm going to kill you was the message. And you go, this is a former president stoking this kind of anger. Now, we still don't have a former president who's been indicted yet, but we got one that wants violence in the streets. He's threatening the district attorney. If you charge me with a crime that someone else went to jail for on my behalf, there will be bloodshed. And he's doing it in Waco during the 30th anniversary of the Branch Davidian debacle, the siege, if you will. That's planned. Doing this on purpose, hoping. I'm not gonna beat around the bush anymore. This guy wants chaos. I think it was Chris Christie who said that he thrives in chaos, thrives in turmoil, because he keeps getting people to say his name. It keeps him in the news. And the question I keep coming back to, When will we stop? And I don't want, you know, this is one of those things that someone said, do you want him indicted? I said, if he's a criminal and he and there's evidence, yeah, I want him indicted. I want him held accountable. But I think it should be after 2024. I think he should be beaten soundly at the polls when people say, no, we don't want this kind of person with this kind of behavior sitting in the most powerful chair on this planet. Someone who can't even complete a sentence. Have you listened to him speak? You know, they rail about Joe Biden. And even I say Joe Biden can't get a sentence up. But you know what? Neither can Trump. Guy speaks in half sentence fragments. And even those are sometimes unintelligible. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1912. That was the birthday of Dorothy Height, a civil rights leader and a champion for black women domestic workers. Domestic workers had largely been left out of the labor protections passed as part of the New Deal. Dorothy had grown up seeing firsthand how this exclusion impacted the women who cleaned homes and did other domestic work. Dorothy was born in Richmond, Virginia. Her mother was a nurse in a black hospital. But when the family relocated to Pennsylvania, her mother could not find work as a nurse. Like many black women who moved north during this time period, Dorothy's mother took a job as a domestic worker. She worked long hours for low wages. As Dorothy became involved in civil rights organizing, she remembered the experiences of her mother. In 1957, she was elected president of the National Council of Negro Women. From that position, she became a leader in the effort to improve working conditions for domestic workers. She became one of the leaders of the National Committee on Household Employment. This committee brought together representatives from 23 organizations concerned about domestic labor. Dorothy explained the urgency of the effort, stating, "Let's treat household employment as a profession in which workers have a contract and are assured fair hours and compensation, as well as coverage by our protective labor laws." Today, labor organizers are still fighting to win fair working conditions for domestic workers. Grassroots organizing has led states like New York and California to pass a Domestic Workers Bill of Rights. Similar efforts are underway in other states to give workers the dignity and the respect that they earn. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Exciting news, people. Utopia is on the rise. Space Commander Elon Musk has announced that his magnificence, i.e. him, intends to construct his very own private town on 3,500 acres of farmland near his new Tesla plant southeast of Austin, Texas. More than a town, Musk explains that he will create utopia in Texas, promising an ecological paradise where his Tesla workers can live and do fun things like swimming, pickleball, and paying rent to him. The billionaire is certainly rich enough to erect his own Muskopolis, but alas, the Utopia name is already taken. Indeed, I've been to Utopia, Texas, a small town west of San Antonio that was founded in 1855 by, cover your ears, Elon, Swiss socialists. Of course, history shows that a company town is ruled by the company, not by residents, much less socialists. And Musk has made clear at Tesla, Twitter, etc., that his personal whims rule over workers, consumers, our environment, and even truth. Which brings us to that ecological workers' paradise he's promising. Even as one arm of his empire was extolling his vision of a Garden of Eden situated along the beauty of the Colorado River, another arm was scheming to pollute it. Musk is asking Texas corporate control regulators to let him use the site to dump 140,000 gallons a day of his industrial wastewater into the Colorado. Excuse me, but that turns Elon's ecological paradise into a fraud. Worse, it adds up to Musk pouring 50 million gallons a year of his waste into the river, fouling the main water source for dozens of towns and hundreds of farms downstream. This is Jim Hightower saying, Musk wants to extend the long sordid history in our country of company town hucksters, and his latest Texas scam is proof that we should never trust a billionaire promising us paradise.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Quote of the day from George Conway. He says he is absolutely putting on the old shtick of trying to get as much attention as possible and trying to raise money off of it. But the matter of the fact is he is terrified. He's talking about Donald Trump. And I don't know that I absolutely agree. I think he loves the fact that he's the center of attention again. You know, we're going to have this big rally in Waco, going to call for some violence. You know, it could be great. We could have another January 6th only with explosives. If all plays out, I mean, why else would you be taking to Waco, Texas to have your big coming out? Lots of questions here. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on where we are, where we're going. That's our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you make of this? What's your thoughts on the Waco rally, and any thoughts on that as a location?
Well, I mean, Waco, I still don't understand how people gravitate towards, you know, that the Waco people were okay. So that's not even in my realm of thinking. As far as the timing, you know, I don't know whether Trump was trying to allude to the fact that, you know, such as the deaths that occurred at Waco, such things would occur, you know, if he's indicted. But his verbiage, even for Trump, you know, the use of death and destruction, even for Trump, goes a little bit towards the overboard. I mean, he's overboard.
A little bit,
actually,
Bob?
But it goes more.
I'd say it goes more. I don't think we've ever had a former president who's threatened this kind of stuff, have we?
Not that I can recall. I haven't, you know, we haven't had presidents that, have rejected the results of the elections. We haven't had that till now. But I think with Trump, what's interesting to me, Rick, is if people, and I don't personally believe there's going to be wide-scale destruction, wide-scale burning of things. I really don't think that's going to happen.
No, I don't think it's going to be wide-scale. I agree with you. I don't see people marching down the street. But I do fear, because if you think about Waco and what came out of Waco, Timothy McVeigh was in Waco, was interviewed in Waco, and then he went on to, you know, do what he did. You know, for me, there's always that diminished capacity out there, if you will, that person who's just, you know, who's hearing on a different wavelength, that's going to go and do something that I think is really dangerous.
Well, I mean, look, it's possible. I saw some clips today of people that are, you know, attacked for absolutely no reason. It's almost an execution on the streets. And it's not for robbery purposes, you know. And so there's all kinds of people out there that, you know, a spark or sometimes not a spark will, you know, do things, and they get motivated. On this one, I would hope that he understands that he really doesn't want something to happen. He shouldn't, because it's not, that will not help. It will not help him. But I think his statements that have, again, even for Trump, went overboard, I think, are because George Conway's got a point. Because I think, you know, tough as he is and nothing bothers him and, you know, he says whatever he wants about whoever he wants, I think he is actually afraid of, you know, what is coming down in New York and potentially, you know, anywhere else, including Georgia. So I think that that's got to be out there for him. I really do.
No, I mean, they say you can't fight a war on two sides. He's fighting it from all four sides. I mean, the walls are literally closing in. You've got the New York thing. You've got this thing. You've got what happened on January 6th. A judge has now ordered that his aides, you know, Mark Meadow and others, other top, you know, former aides, are going to have to testify. That's a pretty big freaking deal, I think.
Well, it is. And, you know, once people start rolling and rolling over, it goes like a domino effect too. You know, I know that for a fact. That's what happens in a lot of these cases. But, you know, with Trump, before this all started to come down about the district attorney in Manhattan, and by the way, them summoning the two that, you know, quit the DA's office, I don't think that's going to do the House Republicans any good, by the way. Yeah. I really don't. They quit because the DA wasn't acting, you know, fast enough on it. But I think that with Trump, prior to this, he was really starting to go down. He really was. People were getting soft, he shouldn't run, et cetera. He's had a semi-burst now of, you know, DeSantis dropping in the polls and him rising in the polls. But I want to note, Rick, this is temporary. This is sort of a, oh, we kind of wanted him to not run again, but now we got to rally around him. This will wear off.
Do you think so?
I mean, there's going to be, look, base of people supporting, but this is going to go back after a while to the point where it's not about the economy, it's not about education, it's not about, you know, inflation. It's about Donald Trump, and do we save him, and can Donald Trump beat the system? I mean, there's more to the country than can Donald Trump beat the system.
No, that's an excellent point. But, you know, I look at this, and there's part of me that goes, I don't know that he's not going away. The fact of the matter is, on Monday, I understand he's going to be making his comeback to Fox News. I guess Hannity's going to have to do the knee work, you know, because he's coming back. I guess it's time to kiss and make up. And like I said, Hannity's going to be the one doing the knee work. But they're going to start embracing him again, I think.
Oh, yeah. But before all of this, this is kind of the not legal side of the DA's move, but this is kind of the sad political side because, frankly, before this, Trump was seriously beginning to take a back seat, and a lot of people, I know I talked to some of the same people because, you know, see how their opinions change, and they went from rabid Trump supporters to still liking him but thinking he shouldn't run. And I've called these same people this week, you know, what do you think? Oh, we've got to defend him. They're picking on him. So he got a second burst from this.
Yeah. Will that last as things come out, do you think? I mean, especially when you look at, you know, the January 6th stuff, or
I don't
do you think
it
that
lasts.
Narrative's already been spent?
I really don't. I don't think it lasts because eventually, if this remains all about Trump, whether he beats this case, whether he beats that case, eventually people do have needs in their lives, and if it's just all about him, it will become old for a lot of people. And then, of course, there's always if he gets through a primary, which, you know, I've still argued he won't run in the end, but if he gets through a primary, then it's the general election. I looked at the numbers on 538 today for Biden and Trump, and they actually mimic each other in their numbers.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, because you're right. At the end of the day, people are still going to need stuff. But my mind goes back to, and part of the thinking I think that might be in Trump's world is people love John Gotti. The Teflon Don kept beating, you know, was able to beat back the system. He was able to beat back the man. There's part of me that goes, you know, there are some who love that.
Well, like I was saying earlier, and I really feel firmly about this, that right now the people that were thinking, okay, sit back, be the party maker, the king maker, do this, do that, and, you know, let somebody else run. And then all of a sudden it was, well, they're picking on him. We got to rally around him. It's a shame what they're doing to him. They're going to destroy the country, on and on and on. And all of a sudden he got a burst. He got a burst.
Yeah. Well,
and I still think eventually it will diminish. And if he gets wrapped up in one more case, which I do agree with the theory, somebody's waiting on somebody else to do something first.
No, I think that's what it's going to be. And then the floodgates open. But we'll see. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. I want to get your thoughts on this story coming out of North Korea. Evidently, they're claiming that they've got a radioactive tsunami weapon. Now, they can't feed. Evidently, 42% of the population of North Korea is what was it? Help me here. They're suffering from malnutrition, malnourished. But they've got the ability to come up with a radioactive tsunami gun. Are you buying this?
You know, he's crazy, Kim Jong-un, and he fires things that, you know, fall into the sea, and he threatens all the time. And now he is, you know, testing this nuclear-capable underwater drone, and it's going to generate a gigantic radioactive tsunami. It'll destroy ports, and I don't buy it. He's dangerous. He's insane, but I'm not, you know, buying this. I think if he ever gets that close to something, somebody, not within his own country, because he is starving his people to death. Of course, they still have to idolize him. Somebody's going to drop something right in the middle of his house.
Yeah. No, and it's probably going to be the Chinese. That's where my mind goes, because at some point, you got to go, just stop it.
Yeah. Look, we dealt with his father. I supported Bill Clinton when we were going to spend $2 billion, which I thought was worth it to keep his dad, who was a psycho, at bay. We tried that, and then we tried, you know, Bush tried a different tactic in Obama, and Trump, frankly, was starting to get somewhere, and, you know, if he shakes his hand and keeps him calm, I was all for that, too, just yeah. like I was if we spent money under Clinton.
Yeah.
But I think it's just come to the point with him, if the intel shows these things are credible, you know, somebody is going to finally say, okay, that's it. And this, the other dangerous part for us is this. If we become over anxious about, you know, curing this problem with Kim Jong-un, what do we have to do, Rick? We have to go to China and ask them to do it. And if we ask China to do it, we're gonna get screwed over in trade issues.
Yep.
So I think we can't be this the lone savior on this to decide what happens with Kim Jong-un.
No, let his own people take him out. At some point they gotta rise up and take him out they just have to at some point. That's just my thought. I brought up China. What do you think of this meeting between Xi Jinping and Putin? And look, you know, Ted Cruz out there saying that the reason this is happening is because Joe Biden's so weak. Any thoughts?
No, this has nothing. This meeting has absolutely nothing to do with Joe Biden. I don't care what Ted Cruz has said. If you look at when Xi cemented himself a few months ago, you know, he had his unprecedented third term, right? Kind of the most powerful guy since Mao, except he's, you know, not having a cultural revolution, but he's consolidated his power, kicked a few people out. Jiang Zemin passed away. He was, you know, kind of a living prominent figure. So put Xi right up the top. Since that time he did that, and I don't know how many months ago, maybe was that 5 or 6 months ago? I forget. But I was researching this the other day, and in some of the documentation in the articles, he has since that time visited 25 heads of state. 25. There was a delegation from Puerto Rico talking to China. Xi is making direct contacts to Honduras. Columbus, Ohio school systems got $30,000 from China to teach English in the schools, which I didn't know that was the second language of Columbus, Ohio. And so you see all these things happening, and this is just about him and China and trying to make he and China on the world stage.
Yep.
This isn't even aimed at Biden. This is about what direction he wants to take China.
No, this is all about influence peddling. And look, I've been arguing for the last 6 years, you know, Trump didn't do us any favors by leaving international relations just in the wind, giving China the ability to fill that void. I was thrilled with the tariffs.
They just did a deal with Iran and Saudi Arabia. We all thought that was impossible. China walked in and did it. And not that Iran is a nice government, but, you know, China had the ability to get Iran and Saudi Arabia together, and China's going to do more of that. And they establish these economic development entities, and they do it with different countries. They do it with Cuba. They do it with, you know, India, Brazil, and the United States, half the time, you know, we get angry at a country for something, so we won't even talk to them.
Yeah. No, it's we're heading for an interesting time. I mean,
we are.
The fact that evidently today, China, how'd they put this, issued a threat of severe consequences if our warship enters this disputed area in the South China Sea. The Paracel Islands, evidently, that they believe are theirs, and you know, bad things could happen. And, you know, this is just, again, them trying to flex their muscles in ways that haven't happened before. So you could have Ted Cruz going, see, it's all Joe Biden's fault, when the reality is this has been building for years.
Oh, years. Ever since China got permanent trade status, it laughed all the way to the bank. It plotted out. It flooded in the cheap products. Once we didn't make those products anymore because the cheap products were bought by everybody, then they rose. They made the prices rise. They brought in lead toys. And what did Congress do after that? They penalized the American toy manufacturers, not China. It's just historic. But even beyond us, China has been, you're right, they've been making these moves for 25 years, very planned, very methodical, you know, aggressive when they need to be. They back off when they need to be. Most of it was economic with other countries. Now you're seeing the diplomatic side. You don't go meeting 25 heads of state in a short period of time as the premier of China unless you've got a plan.
Yep. No, and that plan is target us.
Oh, you know what they want. The standard for the world is not going to be the dollar. It's going to be the yen.
Yep. No. And look, you know, we... again, those 4 years of leaving diplomacy to the wind, this is part of that. Just my thought. Last thing I wanted to get your thoughts on, there's an Iranian drone evidently killed a U.S. worker in Syria. Wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, these are drones, and in this case, it's pretty mixed up in the sense that it's not directly something dispatched from Tehran. It's something they know about. I don't think it was something that was aimed at us because, you know, they're even more angry at us today than they were, you know, last week. It's a touchy part of the world. Now, the unfortunate thing for the world is that Russia and Iran in Syria is probably part of the reason there's not an ISIS flag above Damascus, and you have to throw Assad in there. So we have a mixed bag problem over there. You know, there's surrogates for the Iranians. There's these militia people that they're sort of the stand-ins for the Iranians. So if they take a drone and go after us, or we go after them, then we're going after Iran. Iran's going after us. So some of this is what I call surrogate policy, just like Yemen. The war in Yemen is surrogate puppets for Iran and Saudi Arabia. So I don't think this is anywhere near, it's tragic somebody's killed, but I don't think it's anywhere near a rocket attack from an Iranian, and we are going to then, you know, do some type of war move. Right. We will hit them back in Syria is what we will do.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. But, Bob, as always, I appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Good stuff. Our good friend Bob Name. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1974. It was the final day of a groundbreaking gathering of more than 3,000 women union members in Chicago to found the Coalition of Labor Union Women, or CLU. The union women had come together for the purpose of increasing their voice in the labor movement. Women from 58 unions and 41 states joined the conference. Nearly 2,000 of the attendees were rank-and-file members. For many of them,
The Chicago Gathering was their first major labor conference. They heard a keynote address by Addie Wyatt. Addie Wyatt was the first African-American woman to hold a top office in an American labor union. She was elected vice president of her meatpacking local in 1953. Addie's speech inspired the women. They chose her to serve as the first CLU vice president. They selected Olga Mader as president of CLU. Olga had entered the United Auto Workers Union at the Ford Willow Run bomber plant during World War II. She became the first woman to serve on the UAW executive board. With these two seasoned labor activists at the helm, CLU became an important force in U.S. labor. The women attending the founding convention agreed on four key goals. First was to promote affirmative action in the workplace. Second was to strengthen the role of women in unions. Third, to organize the unorganized women. And their final objective was to increase the involvement of women in the political and legislative process. Since its founding, CLU has supported efforts for pay equality, parental leave, and child care. Today, CLU continues to encourage and mentor future women labor leaders and works to involve more women in the political process. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I got an email during the break from Mary, who doesn't believe me that parents lost their mind in Florida over the Michelangelo sculpture, David. And like I said, you know, this thing's been around since, you know, what, 1501, 15, somewhere between 1501 and 1504. So we're talking over 500 years. This thing's been around. And now you got Florida parents all upset, all angry. Pornography. It's pornography. And yet these are the same people who would want to put the Bible in every school. Which, interestingly enough, and this is the one of the things that I've been waiting for. A parent in Utah actually read the Bible and says, look, it's got porn, it's got all kinds of stuff. It's you name the it's got incest, it's got porn, it's got prostitution, it's got bestiality, it's got there's a lot of things there I can't say on the radio. There's a lot of stuff that the FCC would not allow me to say. And the weird thing is there's, again, lots of sex. Not much in the way of sex ed, but lots in the way of really creepy kind of stuff. I mean, yeah, the Old Testament, really. Wow. Seriously. Wow. And it's one of these things where you go, if we're going to have a real conversation about what books should and shouldn't be in school, maybe we could talk about this one. Because I've read it. You know, when I was in school, I read it. For instance, I posted, you know, a couple of things on Twitter saying, if your child read this, would you be upset? And a lot of people, yeah, this should be. And I'm going, well, that's the Bible. No, it's not there. And you give them the verse, this is where we are. So I find it interesting that, you know, we're heading down this path, and it's going to get ugly. It's going to get uglier before it gets any better, as we've seen in the past. The question I have is, when will sane, rational minds come back together and stop this extremism? I mean, religion is another one of these things that's tearing us apart into the polar opposite fields. For instance, I had a guy at the gym today, you know, tell me that he was thrilled that the Pope is a Jesuit and that I should read the Jesuit oath, and that, you know, you'll be happy because the Jesuit oath, you know, he's on our side. And I'm not quite even sure what that meant or what his assumptions were, but he felt the need to tell me that the Pope was a Jesuit and the Jesuit oath, and that's going to go, and you read this, and it means they're going to go kill the Protestants. So when the Protestants get their, you know, their end times, these people are going to, it's crazy. And I keep coming back to, I thought religion was supposed to help us be better people, connect spiritually with a higher power, be better people.
I keep coming back to that. Be better people. Be a better version of ourselves instead of the worst version of ourselves. But very interesting to see how this is all going and where we're heading, sadly, as a country, as we literally eat each other. We'll see. I want to hear your thoughts, though, even crazy ones. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you get the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.